True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, rushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Lucas Giolito appears to be broken, but can he be fixed? Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Thursday, June 23rd. Frank Sample joined by Chris Towers. Today on the show, we'll talk about those struggles from Lucas Giolito. Austin Hayes appreciation night/morning when you're listening to this. More waiver wire moves and rankings risers and fallers. But let's jump right in.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right, Chris. You will get the Olive Garden breadstick of the night. Although,
unfortunately, this breadstick is. It fell on the floor and it's covered in hair. And
not great.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not what you want. Lucas Giolito, when he went on the COVID IL on after his May 10th start, he had a 2.70 ERA. Let's see what it's up to now. It's a lot higher than that. Is it double? Is it twice what it was? He had another bad start today against Toronto.
I believe it's exactly double. It's 5.40.
There you go. Double his ERA from when he went on the COVID list. And look, I wonder if that's part of it. I mean, he was only out for 7 days, I think, the minimum. But yeah, he ended up, he hasn't been good since then. And you had the numbers last five starts, 9.64 ERA, 11 walks, 9 home runs allowed. And he's been really bad for a little over a month now. 14 hard hit balls today, only 3 strikeouts.
Rude.
My guess is that he's fine or, you know,
he's definitely
fine.
He's not fine right now.
But will be fine moving forward and will continue to, you know, be the guy that's been a very good starting pitcher at the major league level for the last 4 seasons. His velocity is, it's not great. It's not like 3 miles per hour down. He's down. Today was down to 92.3, which is about a mile and a half per hour down from what it was last season. So if that was the case moving forward, that would be a concern. But I have to think that he's been so good the last couple of years that he's going to figure it out. That being said, you know, I've pretty much kept him in the top 12-ish at starting pitcher. And I think that's clearly no longer tenable. I would rather have Shane Bieber than him. Just going through the guys who I have ranked right behind him currently, Shane Bieber, Max Fried, Dylan Cease, Pablo Lopez, Brandon Woodruff. I think it gets interesting with Lopez and Woodruff. You know, Woodruff obviously a big concern with the injury and just what that's going to mean moving forward. Lopez, he was good today, but not getting a ton of swinging strikes, hasn't been quite as effective of late. I think I'm going to move him below those guys, though. I think I'm going to move him down to 21. So that's right ahead of Luis Severino, right behind Logan Webb. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm looking at my rankings right now, and full transparency, I updated all my hitter rankings on Wednesday, and I'm going to do pitchers on Thursday. And I think right around Robbie Ray. So I moved Robbie Ray down recently, and he's been better. He's incorporated the sinker, and he's looked much better. Mm-hmm. And he's SP23. I'm thinking just behind that. So that would put Giolito behind Robbie Ray, Woodruff, Shohei Ohtani, who had an amazing start again.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Julio Urias, who's looked much better recently. And then it's just ahead of that glob. That's where the glob started. Yeah. For me, I'm much higher on Framber Valdez in points leagues just because he goes very deep into his starts. Yep. He's been solid for a while now. Kyle Wright
in that range for me.
Kyle Wright, Logan Gilbert, Clayton Kershaw. You know, that to me, that's the start of the glob of starting pitchers. And mm-hmm. I'm going to put Giolito at the front of that for now. And just knowing he has the ability to move up, move back up the rankings if he can get back on track. What is going wrong so far this season? You mentioned some of the things, velocity being down. He's getting crushed with home runs. His barrel percentage against is in the sixth percentile. So he's just absolutely getting crushed. I tried to find a quote, find something after the game. This was from the Chicago Sun-Times. Giolito has tinkered with mechanical adjustments during the stretch and said progress has been made, but there is no sign of it in the results. Location and stuff have both been subpar. And here's what he had to say. It's a combination. Leaving too many pitches middle. Just got to figure it out. That's it. Antonio La Russa said after that Giolito's healthy. So I'm going to take his word for it. Would you buy low? That's the next question.
Yeah, I mean, there's some real, like, conflicting indicators. Right now, his changeup usage is lower than it was last season. It's down to 22.5%.
That's supposed 32%
last year.
That's supposed to be his best pitch, too.
Well, and that's the thing, is that last season it was. He had a 245 expected wOBA with it, 35% whiff rate. I mean, the slider was right there with it, but the changeup was his go-to put-away pitch. And this season, it just hasn't been as effective. He's still getting a lot of whiffs with it, 39%, but he has a 362 expected wOBA with it. That was 245 last year. It's not getting hit hard, though. He has an 80-mile-per-hour average exit velocity on the changeup, so that's weird. It's one of those cases where there are some seeming issues with not throwing as hard in particular, the changeup not being as effective, but I have faith that they'll be able to figure something out. The White Sox have numerous times with Giolito, you know, been able to either one, you know, figure out what got him to be so good a couple of years ago. And then, you know, there have been some moments where he's struggled over the past couple of seasons. Spin rate on the fastball is way down for the season, about 200 RPMs. So that is, you know, one potential explanation for why he's been less effective overall, although the fastball hasn't been much less effective than it was last season. So I don't know if that's the answer, but, you know, it could be a situation where the fastball is not playing up and it makes the changeup less effective.
People were asking me on Twitter, what would I give up to get Lucas Giolito? And obviously I'd be looking to buy low. How are you doing, Chris? You good?
Am I better?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm just going to continue on here. The name I was looking at was Zach Gallen. Would I sell high on a Zach Gallen to get Lucas Giolito? And I think that's right on the cusp. You know, Zach Gallen, Logan Gilbert. And I don't think I think that's probably too much. I want to give up even less to try and buy low on Lucas Giolito right now. And Chris, how are we doing?
I think it's better. I think it was a StreamYard issue.
Potentially.
Hopefully.
Let's hope so. Let's hope we're good moving forward. I brought up two names while you were gone. Logan Gilbert and the other one was Zach Gallen. Would you give up either of those to get Lucas Giolito right now?
I would rather have Giolito than either of those. But like you were saying, I do think, like, if you're going to buy low, you probably want to buy lower.
Yeah.
Gallen, I think, is fine, though. You know, in particular, because of the issues that we talked about yesterday, the concerns about durability and the health of that elbow moving forward. You know, I think that would be okay.
All right. Well, that is Giolito. Next week, he's in line for two starts, it looks like, at the Angels, at the Giants.
I mean, tough matchups.
Based on this recent stretch, I think you have to bench him everywhere, Chris.
I could see maybe in a points league, you know, where your ratios aren't going to get tanked, but he hasn't been providing much positive value in a points league either lately. So, yeah, I think you probably have to sit him moving forward until he figures it out. I am fairly confident he will, though.
All right, let's move over to my oh my goodness gracious player. This is a better Olive Garden breadstick. This is kind of the another free square for the night. Austin Hayes hit for the cycle in a 6-inning game.
All right, looks like Frank's having some technical issues. It's not my fault this time. But like he was saying, Austin Hayes hit for the cycle in a 6-inning game. Kind of even more impressively, I think he had 4 strikeouts in yesterday's game. Probably, if not the first time a player's hit for the cycle in a 6-inning game, probably the first time a player's hit for the cycle in a 6-inning game after striking out 4 times the previous game. I haven't checked that one, but I feel pretty confident in it. And Austin Hayes is someone who probably has not gotten the respect that he deserves so far. And it's actually unquestionable that he hasn't gotten the respect he deserves so far, because he hasn't really been a highly ranked player for either Scott, Frank, or myself. He was outside of my top 60 heading into this game. I've moved him up. But he's hitting .287 with 10 home runs, 37 runs, 40 RBI. He's the number 24 outfielder in head-to-head points leagues, number 28 in Roto. And, you know, obviously, coming off of a day where he hit for the cycle, those numbers are going to improve even more. It's worth looking into what he's doing differently and whether it's sustainable. And, you know, the expected WOBA, 340. The actual WOBA entering today, 344. So those line up pretty well. You know, he's probably had a little bit of luck in terms of his batting average is .287 when the XBA is .270. But he's cut his strikeout rate. And he's hitting more line drives. Line drive rate up from 22.6% to 24.6%. And he's done that, you know, without necessarily sacrificing any quality of contact. Barrel rate down a little bit, but not concerning. His exit velocity, hard hit rate, both up. The problem is, one, I don't think Austin Hayes, like, you look at his skill set, and I'm not sure he stands out anywhere. Like, he's got a slightly better than average strikeout rate. He hits the ball slightly harder than average, and it could be a situation where the sum is greater than the parts individually. But that's also the kind of player who you'll often see is not as good as the, you know, underlying numbers suggest. So I don't know, between somewhat middling quality of contact metrics and the poor park and poor lineup that he plays in, my sense is that Austin Hayes is certainly not going to be a top 30 outfielder moving forward. And, you know, when I moved him up in my rankings, it wasn't into the top 30. He's kind of in that outfield blob, and I'm going to put him in like the 50 range. So, you know, behind Andrew Vaughn and Ian Happ and Jesse Winker, but probably ahead of like someone like Randall Grichuk at this point, who, you know, I do think there are, like, Frank's frozen. He's looking very pensive off to the side. But like, I would rather have Orioles teammate Ryan Mountcastle over Austin Hayes. You know, Ryan Mountcastle, both of them hitting much better than any of us expected to this season. But Mountcastle, the underlying stats are a little more impressive. They're actually a lot more impressive, right? Mountcastle, if you take the underlying stats at face value, looks like one of the best hitters in baseball. I don't think he's that. He kind of looks like Nick Castellanos, like the good version of Nick Castellanos. So, yeah, I would rather have Mountcastle than Hayes, but Hayes clearly deserves more credit than we've given him so far. And so, yeah, I'm going to move him into the top 50 at outfielder. Some of the names ahead of that I'm putting him ahead of, you know, and I don't think these guys are too surprising, but like Hunter Renfroe, Connor Joe, Miles Straw, guys who I think they can be okay fantasy options. But I think with the way Austin Hayes is hitting the ball right now, yeah, you'd rather have him than those guys. So pretty good day for Austin Hayes, hitting for the cycle in a 6-inning game. Frank keeps popping in, popping back out, and let's see. Here's Frank.
Am I here? Am I working?
You're here.
I don't know.
You look a little fuzzy. It just cleared up. I think you're good.
I hope we're good. I did a speed test. I think everything looks good on my end. I don't know what is going on. This is It always seems to happen when we're together, Chris. I don't know why, but hopefully
it was a scary couple of minutes having to be on my own. I was starting to run out of gas. I was starting to feel it. I'm like, my heart's racing, my pulse, you know. So I'm glad you're back.
All right, good. All right. I assume you talked all about Austin Hayes. And overall, I think he's fine. I guess you can consider him a sell high. I don't know that you're going to get anything for Austin Hayes. It just seems like he's been very solid across the board, and that's been good enough just because the rest of the outfielders in baseball haven't been great. So I think if you have Austin Hayes, just ride it out, and let's see where he goes from here. Oh, my goodness gracious. Game, I guess. Offensively, their pitcher was great. We'll just talk about the Cubs. And they put up 14 runs on 13 hits against the Pirates. They hit 3 home runs. Patrick Wisdom hit his 14th homer. Ian Happ went 1-for-2 with his 8th homer. And for those in deeper leagues, Rafael Ortega went 3-for-5 with 2 RBI. He's betting .333 in June. Doesn't play all that consistently. It'd have to be a really deep league for him. And Alfonso Rivas is the other one who went 2-for-4. Believe he hit a grand slam off of a position player, Diego Castillo. So, well, actually, there is a Diego Castillo pitcher out there. And I guess now there's 2 Diego Castillo pitchers. but Chris, is there anything with these in deeper leagues, Ortega or Rivas?
I don't think so. You know, Ortega, he's leading off, you know, for the Cubs. So there's always going to be the potential for decent counting stats. But no, I think both of these guys, and especially Rivas, is just a guy. Ortega, you know, he was decent last season. There's a little bit of speed there, so it's not out of the question that he could be useful in a 5 outfielder league, especially, you know, your 15 team outfielder leagues. But the quality of contact is pretty bad. I don't know. He's kind of like John Birdie without the speed, which is, you know, not exactly.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah, so I think he's pretty middling.
All right, well, let's talk about their starting pitcher in Keegan Thompson, who...
Well, I will say, like, Ian Happ is someone who...
He's having a great year.
Been around the 40th outfielder for me consistently, but that's probably underselling him at this point. I mean, the quality of contact metrics are very good across the board. His expected WOBA matches his WOBA exactly, actually one of the rare players, 370 expected WOBA, 370 actual WOBA. He's cut his strikeout rate tremendously down to 19.5%, by far the lowest of his career. His previous career low was 25%. He's walking a ton. He's even running a little bit, 5 stolen bases. I don't know. Ian Happ is someone that he's put together really good second halves, like 3 seasons in a row. There have been these stretches from Ian Happ where he's looked really, really good. And maybe he's just figured it out in a way that can make him a must-start fantasy outfielder, even 3 outfielder leagues.
Yeah, I have him right on that cusp. He's my 34th ranked outfielder, right around Ryan Mountcastle and Tommy Pham, who, you know, just quietly doing his thing. So it's been a very good season for Ian Happ. Let's talk about their starting pitcher, Keegan Thompson, back-to-back quality starts after that 2-start week of doom. I know Scott's mentioned it recently. I think Keegan Thompson gave up like 10 runs over his 2 starts, but he's been better since then. He gave up 1 run over 6 innings pitched with 7 strikeouts against the Pirates. Drops his ERA to 3.10. Gets a good amount of ground balls. Doesn't strike out many. Probably walks too many. 37% rostered, and looks like he's in line for 2 starts next week against the Reds and the Red Sox. What do you think about Keegan Thompson?
Yeah, I don't quite understand. You know, there's not any one pitch that really stands out for him, except over the past couple of starts. You know, he's gotten decent whiff numbers with his fastball. I think it was like 9 whiffs with the fastball in his previous start, only 4 today, only 8 total. I think he's Keegan Thompson's probably just a guy, you know, maybe a high 3s ERA, but I don't know if he does enough well to be fantasy relevant in most mixed leagues.
All right. Well, that'll transition us into other waiver wire pitchers that emerged on Wednesday. I mean, Michael Wacha is just doing his best Martin Perez impression right now. He delivers another quality start, 6 innings, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts. I wrote 0 swinging strikes. That's definitely not true. That's probably supposed to be 10, I would imagine, on 98 pitches. The ERA is 2.34 for Michael Wacha. The underlying numbers are much
nine swinging worse. Strikes for him.
Nine swinging strikes. Okay. For Waka in this one. He's 74% rostered. And it looks like he's at Toronto next week. Not great there. John Gray puts together another solid start. This one up against the Phillies. He gives up two runs over 5 2/3. He had 15 swinging strikes. And over his last seven starts, he's got a 3.41 ERA. Ross Stripling posts a quality start at the White Sox. Six innings of one run ball, five strikeouts. His ERA in nine starts this season, 2.84. He's been very solid. That is Ross Stripling. Looks like he's got the Red Sox and Tampa next week. And then Tyler Wells, he's been all right for the Orioles. Five shutout innings, four walks, four strikeouts, 22% rostered. He's at the Mariners, at the Twins. Chris, what do you think about this group? Waka, John Gray, Ross Stripling, Tyler Wells.
Waka has been a boon for my team in the Scott White Dynasty League, which is not a lot else going right for me, unfortunately, in that league. But he's been really good. I don't expect that to continue. That's a 24-team league, so I'll probably just keep using him. But yeah, I don't think Michael Waka at this point, given what he's doing, not getting a lot of strikeouts. Expected ERA is two full runs higher than his actual ERA. I think you can probably expect Michael Waka to be more like a 4+ ERA guy moving forward. Useful in two start weeks as a streamer. In head-to-head points leagues, but I don't want to see what he's likely to do to my ratios moving forward. So I would probably want to stay away. Stripling is somewhat interesting because he's been interesting in the past, but he hasn't really gotten any strikeouts since 2019 when he had a 25% strikeout rate. Since then, 18.2, 21.8, 20% strikeout rate this season. He has lowered his launch angle. Allowed quite a bit. He hasn't really done it by like throwing a sinker. He's not doing like the Martin Perez thing, but his four seam fastball has gone from having a 24 degree average launch angle to a 14 degree average launch angle. And his slider has similarly seen big improvements in that regard. But like Martin Perez, I just don't think it's a profile that's particularly worth getting excited about. He actually in a lot of ways looks like Martin Perez. Strikeout rate, walk rate, all look pretty similar. And I don't think that's a type of pitcher that's going to be worth getting excited about in a, points league when he's got two starts, in a mixed league when he's got a good matchup. I think he can continue to be useful, but I'm not excited about Ross Stripling.
I don't think he's a world beater or anything, but I don't know. There's some things that I'm very encouraged by with Ross Stripling. The ground ball rate, you mentioned his launch angle, is way down this year. His swinging strike rate is 11.2%. That's his highest since 2018. His control has been much better, and he's throwing his changeup a lot more this season, and it's been a very, very good pitch for him. 32% whiff rate is okay, but the results, 152 batting average against, 227 slugging percentage against. I don't know. There might be something here with Ross Stripling. He's 41% rostered. He's in line for two starts next week. The Red Sox, Tampa Bay. I would say of the five names we've mentioned so far, Keegan Thompson, Waka, John Gray, Stripling, and Tyler Wells. John Gray and Stripling are like the clear top two for me that if you're looking to add anyone for two starts next week, it's those two. So
yeah, I would rank John Gray a decent bit ahead of Stripling. Just there's more swing and miss potential there, and more strikeout potential as a result. But I'm not sure either is likely to be a stalwart for you moving forward. Stripling, it's interesting. He does have a 93% chase rate, he's in the 93rd percentile in chase rate. 93% chase rate would be pretty bonkers. And so, that does make me wonder how sustainable even the middling strikeout and swinging strike rates that he has, because it's not like he's throwing the ball out of the zone a lot. Martin Perez, one thing that I did a deep dive on Martin Perez, and mostly came to the same conclusion that I've held throughout the season. But one thing that he is doing is he's doing a very good Dallas Keuchel impersonation. He's throwing like 35% of his pitches in the strike zone. Ross Stripling's not doing that. He's at 48%. And so I do wonder how much weak contact he can continue to garner while pitching that much in the zone when he doesn't have great stuff. You know, maybe this renewed focus on the changeup will help, but I'm pretty skeptical.
All right. Well, last thing I wanted to mention about John Gray, everything mostly looks the same for him. He's just done a better job limiting home runs this season, which could be an effect of a better home park, not pitching at Coors Field. And he's got a 3.44 ERA at home this season. So I think that kind of makes sense. And I think that adds up for John Gray. Let's move over to some waiver wire hitters. Alec Thomas, Chris, is just kind of sneakily having a very good rookie season so far. He went 2-for-5. He hit his 6th home run. He also has 4 steals. That is a 21 homer, 14 steal pace over 150 games. He's hitting 270, 95th percentile in sprint speed, makes a good amount of contact, does hit a lot of ground balls. But Alec Thomas is still out there. I would imagine in some 3 outfielder leagues, he's 60% rostered and he's moved up the lineup. He's batted 2nd in 4 of the last 5 games for Arizona. And I was going to lump him in here with Garrett Cooper, another outfielder who's playing very well. 2-for-4, hit his 5th home run. In the month of June, he's batting .394, 2 home runs, 13 RBI. Always hits a lot of line drives, hits the ball hard. The problem, just doesn't put the ball in the air enough. What do you think about Alec Thomas, Garrett Cooper? Where should those two names be rostered?
I think the bigger problem for Garrett Cooper is more that he just cannot stay healthy. I mean, he doesn't hit for as much power as you would probably want. You know, he's played 163 games between 2020, 2021, and 2022, which already tells you how much time he misses. But he's mostly managed to stay healthy this season. And during those 163 games, he has 19 home runs, .294 average, .842 OPS. He is someone who makes good contact when he does. He doesn't strike out an overwhelming amount. I think Garrett Cooper is a pretty solid option as long as he's healthy. I don't know. You know, that's kind of like, is he going to stay healthy moving forward? Well, the fact that he's only 37% rostered, it probably makes that a little moot. And he is eligible at what, first and outfield?
Yep.
So that little bit of flexibility there helps. Given how few outfielders are impact players right now, I think Garrett Cooper is worth rostering in, I would say, anything 12 team or deeper. Roto, you know, points leagues, it might be harder to get him in there, although that's a good format for him when he's playing. And Alec Thomas, 60% roster rate is too low. You know, this is the comp that I just thought of is he's what we wanted Trent Grisham to be. You know, slightly different profile. Grisham strikes out more, hits more fly balls. Alec Thomas, pretty contact oriented, hits the ball on the ground a lot. But the overall production, I think, is going to be pretty similar. And I think there's, you know, the quality of contact metrics for Alec Thomas are pretty middling right now. But obviously, he's very talented. He's put up good numbers in the minors to the point where I do think there's room for him to grow as a hitter. So I think he's very good. I don't know if he's a starter in points leagues, but I think he's close. I think he's pretty fringy, especially if he's going to hit near the top of the lineup. So yeah, Alec Thomas, I add him where he's available.
How would you rank these four young, exciting outfielders, Chris? Riley Green, Michael Harris, Alec Thomas, and Alex Kirilloff.
I have them ranked Thomas, Harris, Green, Kirilloff, I think. It could be Kirilloff, Green, but I think they're 3rd and 4th.
Okay. Yeah, so I did update my outfield ranks, and I've got it Harris, Riley Green, Alec Thomas, and Kirilloff. But, man, I mean, Harris, Green, and Thomas, they're all within 6 spots of each other, so it is very close. It's kind of fluid right now. I really, really love what I've seen from Michael Harris so far. And
yeah,
I know he bats 9th, but I mean the lineup advantage, just playing for the Braves, there's going to be a lot of opportunities.
And lineup spot is always going to be fluid. I mean, with that team, it might be harder to move up. You know, that top two, you know, Acuna and Swanson, that's probably pretty cemented. But you know, Matt Olson was hitting 6th a couple of days ago. So it's not out of the question that Michael Harris could start to move up. I do want to see what it looks like, because, you know, Alec Thomas has just been around for a little longer in the majors. And so there have been more opportunities for pitchers to adjust for him. Michael Harris has been very aggressive so far, putting a lot of balls in play, not walking very much. You know, I want to see what happens when pitchers figure that out.
All right, let's take a look at two Cleveland Guardians players here. This is kind of beat the waiver wire hitter edition because they have 8 games next week. So I think these are players that we're going to be targeting. Amed Rosario is heating up. He went 4-for-5, hit his second home run in the month of June. He's hitting .354, 2 homers, 5 doubles, 4 steals. He really, you know, he's not heating up. He's pretty much on fire right now. That is Amed Rosario, 48% rostered. The other name, Oscar Gonzalez, 2-for-5, hit his second home run, makes a lot of contact. The problem, a lot of it on the ground. He's kind of a freak athlete, 91st percentile max exit velocity, 92nd percentile sprint speed. I don't know if it needs to be in anything shallower than 5 outfielder leagues, Chris, but Oscar Gonzalez is very, very interesting. And Amed Rosario is hot.
Yeah, Rosario, it just... I wish that they let him run more, or that he was willing to run more. He's only attempted 22 stolen bases over the past 3 seasons. And he got caught stealing a lot early on in his career with the Mets. He had 10-plus caught stealings in both 2018 and 2019 as a full-time player. He's been caught stealing twice over the past 2 seasons. That is a balance that I wish they would shift more to the aggressive side. And, you know, the 4 steals in June, maybe that's a sign of that. Because I don't think he's going to hit enough to be much more than a fringe option unless he starts running more. Like if Amed Rosario was a 20 steal guy who I can see hitting .275 with, yeah, not much power, then he starts to get a little more interesting. But right now, I think he's pretty fringy. You know, corner or middle infielder only, really. But I think Frank's frozen again. Gonzalez, though, I think is very interesting. He was someone who came up, and I think in his first game, had like a 114 mile per hour batted ball. He has max exit velo, 113. And he's hit really well at AAA. You know, an 810 OPS is not world-beating stuff, but 113 games at the AAA level, he's hit 27 home runs. And didn't steal any bases, actually, which is interesting given the athleticism that he's shown. Because like you said, 91st percentile max exit velo, 92nd percentile average or sprint speed, 91.6 mile per hour average exit velocity, hard hit rate is 48%, and he doesn't strike out. 19.6% strikeout rate for Oscar Gonzalez. So he's showing some really interesting skills. Another guy who hits the ball on the ground too much. You know, that's a recurring theme with these guys who have intriguing skills but aren't putting it in play as often as you would like to see. Oscar Gonzalez is another one of those guys. But I do think there is there's quite a lot of potential there for Oscar Gonzalez to emerge as a viable 5 outfielder league guy. I don't think points leagues yet, although the strikeout rate does make you think there's some potential there. But yeah, for 5 outfielder leagues, 12 team or deeper, you know, I think he's fringy in 12 teams, but he's interesting outside of that context. So there you go. Frank is continuing to have some technical difficulties. So we'll just move on down the rundown here. And Kyle Raleigh is another waiver wire hitter down here. Him and Jorge Alfaro are being compared here. Jorge Alfaro went 2-for-5 with his 6th home run. He's hitting .340 with 4 home runs, a .1069 OPS in the month of June, and he started 7 of the last 11 games for the Padres. Cal Raleigh, I don't know why I say it like Kyle, but Cal Raleigh, 1-for-4 with his 9th home run. Cal Raleigh has been quite good since getting a chance to play more regularly. 189 batting average, that's not great, but 9 home runs and 139 plate appearances. The quality of contact metrics largely back it up, 48% hard hit rate. 91 mile per hour average. Exit velocity, that's both very good. The problem is that 189 batting average, even the expected stats, which are better, only suggest a 233 batting average. He strikes out 30% of the time. I think it's probably like a Mike Zunino-esque profile moving forward, and that's useful in fantasy. I think Kyle Raleigh probably does need to be a top 20 catcher, but I don't think he's someone in one catcher leagues, especially since most of those are point leagues that you need to be particularly impressed with. So Alfaro, it's tough because he's someone who we talked about a little bit last week. He's always had the potential. You know, you could argue that Jorge Alfaro is the most physically gifted catcher in baseball, just in terms of his ability to, just what he's physically capable of in terms of how hard he hits the ball, 98th percentile, max exit velo. Every single season of his career, except for 2020, he's been in the top 5% of the league in max exit velo. So he is capable of hitting the ball incredibly hard. The problem is he always strikes out 30% of the time. He's at 32.3% of the time. And problem in the past is that he hits the ball on the ground too much. You've heard that before. 48% ground ball rate at least every season of his career entering 2021. But maybe the Padres have figured something out because his ground ball rate is down all the way to 41.5%. 25.6% fly ball rate, 30.5% line drive rate. I think the line drive rate is probably a little inflated, but with how hard Jorge Alfaro hits the ball, it's not out of the question that he can be relevant in, I think it's probably out of the question for 12 team leagues, unless he just starts playing every day and cuts the strikeout rate. But 12 team two catcher leagues, I think Jorge Alfaro absolutely deserves to be in the mix. You know, you should be in those two catcher leagues and really in your one catcher leagues, unless you have one of the handful of elite guys, you should be churning the position. You know, I think in two catcher leagues, there are probably, I don't know, Frank, maybe you disagree, maybe you agree, but I think there's probably like 16 to 18 catchers who I feel pretty good about. If you go through my rankings, you know, I guess there's some guys on IL like Yasmani Grandal and who else is on IL right now?
Tyler Stevenson,
Mitch Garver just got back. But yeah, I think if you go, you could go like 16 to 18 deep at the position where I feel pretty good about having those guys on my team. In my rankings, that goes through to Gabriel Moreno. After that, if you don't have two of those guys, you should be churning the catcher position. You know, you should be trying to find, you're going through Jonah Heim and, you know, Elias Diaz and these guys that we've, Joey Bart early on the season and Jose Trevino, and trying to find someone who can stick. And I think Jorge Alfaro absolutely belongs in that discussion right now. And the skills that he's showing right now, I think make him a top 20-ish catcher. I'm moving him up to 20 right now.
I agree. I think Jorge Alfaro has been very impressive, especially in the month of June. He's changed the launch angle this year. And Cal Raleigh, another one there, hit his 9th home run, and he's been much better in June. Even Jose Trevino, I think he's kind of in this conversation, back end of the top 25 catchers. He hit another home run for the Yankees here on Wednesday. So yeah, lots going on with the catcher two spot if you do play in a roto league. In deeper leagues, a few names I just wanted to mention here. Apologies, by the way. I know my internet's acting all crazy right now. Someone's getting a nasty email and or phone call tomorrow. I will tell you that in deeper leagues.
Dal Brewer, are you actually the guy who will do that?
No, I'm not going to do that. But like,
I can't bring myself to be mean to the customer service rep. I know it's not their fault, and I can't, right. I can't just do the thing where I'm using them as a stand-in for this large faceless corporation that's screwing me over. I can't do it. I can't bring myself to get mad at them.
I'm all talk. I will do a vigorous Twitter search after this to see if maybe there's something going on in my area, but outside of that, nothing else. In deeper leagues, just wanted to mention Vidal Brujan. I'm kind of interested just because there's so much playing time available now with Tampa Bay. He hit his second home run of the season here. Just someone to watch, especially in those deeper leagues. And in the deepest, I mean, NL only, whatever. Albert Almora has 3 homers over his last 5 games. He's 2% rostered, and his quality of contact is still quite bad. So I don't really think there's anything there, but two names to look at.
Yeah, my problem with Bruhan is I think it was like the first, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 games of last year's minor league season. This first 16 games of last year's minor league season, he hit 7 home runs, which was like, oh man, is Vidal Bruhan starting to figure this out? Like, he's always been someone who'd never hit for power, but scouts have always thought he could grow into it. That was the first 16 games of that season. So if you take the rest of the AAA season last year, his major leagues, the last two seasons as well, he's hit 6 home runs in his last like 140 games. So that's the concern, is I just don't think there's any pop there.
Fair enough. All right. Well, did you take a break while I was gone, Chris?
No, not an official one.
Okay, so let's take a break.
I think we're taking a break right now. Jeez. With Frank's internet continuing to struggle. I did take a break just to catch my breath, so maybe we'll just do that again. Here's a break.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
News and notes. Fernando Tatis told reporters that he's been swinging a bat at about 40% intensity in recent days. That's the first we've heard of Fernando Tatis really taking part in any kind of swinging activities, but he remains without a precise timeline to swing fully. Remember last week, he had a follow-up CT scan that did not show the kind of healing that they hoped for. So still without a timeline for Fernando Tatis. Max Scherzer struck out 6 over 3 1/3 innings of 2-run ball in his rehab start. And it sounds like he's going to potentially start Sunday against the Marlins if he's cleared. Luis Robert was removed from Wednesday's game due to leg soreness, though he's expected to be in the lineup on Thursday. George Springer underwent imaging on his left elbow, is considered day-to-day for now, but we'll see what the results of that testing show. Salvador Perez aggravated his sprained left thumb, awaiting MRI results. We'll see what that looks like, but not great. If you're in one of those leagues that allows you to make lineup changes for your hitters on Fridays, I think NFC leagues all allow that, you might want to consider getting Salvador Perez out there, maybe add Jorge Alfaro if he's available. And Carlos Carrasco left Wednesday's game against Houston with lower back tightness. He's scheduled to undergo an MRI, but he did not look good in this one. He was beat up. Gave up 5 earned runs on 4 hits and 2 1/3. Walked 2, had no strikeouts. Velocity was down about 1 mile per hour. Quote, every pitch they hit out there was just right there in the middle. I just couldn't finish my pitches. Last 8 starts, 560 ERA, underlying numbers still quite good. Babbitt's high. It's hard to say exactly what is causing Carlos Carrasco's struggles, at least prior to this start. You know, this one, you have a pretty good excuse with the back issue, but yeah, I've had Carlos Carrasco as a top 30 starting pitcher for most of the season, and not feeling great about that one right now with the way he's pitching. So definitely someone I'm going to have to reconsider his ranking moving forward. Edward Cabrera missed his scheduled rehab start Wednesday due to a personal matter. Max Meyer did start at AAA for the Marlins and looked quite good, so that's a good sign. Eddie Rosario will have his vision reevaluated Thursday and is optimistic that he's close to beginning a rehab assignment. He's 50% rostered. I had kind of I had kind of assumed Eddie Rosario was pretty much done for the season, so I'd moved him way down. I'm going to have to move him back up, but you know, given the nature of this issue, it's not clear whether Eddie Rosario is going to, you know, be able to get back and hit like himself, but he clearly wasn't himself before. So that's something to keep in mind. If you have an IL spot open, Eddie Rosario is a decent stash, although he's kind of a he's kind of a fringy outfielder, even when things are going well. You know, last season, obviously, he finished the season strong, but was pretty mediocre for most of the season. So, you know, not necessarily a mustache in my eyes. Jarren Duran won't play in the series in Toronto starting on Monday because he's not vaccinated, presumably. So that's not a good sign. He has been, you know, showing some real signs, both in AAA and his time in the majors. So not exactly thrilled to see him missing time for that. Glenn Otto rejoined the Rangers and will likely be activated from the COVID IL Sunday against the Nationals. Not really someone I'm looking to stream. Reed Detmers was optioned to AAA. Remember, he had that no-hitter early in the season, but just hasn't been able to figure out the fastball. That's been the big issue for him. The curveball's been a fine pitch for him. He can get swings and misses with it, but the fastball just continues to get hit hard, continues to not locate it well. And a couple prospects moved up in the lineup. O'Neill Cruz led off for the Pirates. Riley Green batting second for the Tigers. We'll see how long or whether those stick. Doing a one-man podcast, you got to talk a lot, and I'm, you know, struggling a little bit. Let's talk about some rankings, risers, and fallers before we move on to some of the rest of the performances from Wednesday. My rankings, risers, Jake Cronenworth has just been incredible in June. Ryan Mountcastle, we talked about him last week. I wrote a column about him on CBSSports.com that you can check out, where I basically just wrote, that was on Monday, the trade values chart. And I just wrote about how Ryan Mountcastle, you know, clearly we were wrong about thinking that he was going to be a bust this season. He's been actually quite good, but he's also someone who, if you look at the underlying numbers, they suggest that he's been much better than he actually has been. He's been good, especially in June, but the underlying numbers suggest he's been one of the best hitters in baseball. I mentioned Nick Castellanos comp earlier. The problem is that park in Baltimore is going to hold him back, and I think it's going to make it hard for Ryan Mountcastle to live up to those expected stats. So he's one that I moved up. He's in my top 36 in outfield, but probably not going to move up too much more than that unless he just really gets hot or stays hot. Marcus Semien moved up. Javier Baez moved up. Both those guys starting to figure it out. Baez had another couple of hits today. I think he had a home run as well, so that's a good sign. Bobby Witt Jr., we've talked about. I've seen some people saying that, you know, he should be moved ahead of Nolan Arenado. Frank might have said it on Twitter on Wednesday, or at least suggested the possibility. I'm not ready to do that. Nolan Arenado has been pretty, I don't want to say fringy, because I think that would be the fourth time I've said it in today's podcast, but he's been, like, if you go back to the first week of the season, he had four home runs in the first six games. Arenado has been like a 25 homer, 80 run or 70 run, 85 RBI guy who's hitting 250. I think he's probably a little better than that. And Bobby Witt has been very good lately. You know, really since he got off to a slow start, he's hitting for power, he's running, hitting for a little bit of batting average as well. But I would still take Arenado over Witt, but I think it's an interesting discussion. Frank, were you thinking about moving Bobby Witt above Nolan Arenado? Did I see that on Twitter?
Am I here? Am I working? Is this thing on?
You're here. I see you. I hear you.
All right. Well, let's enjoy it while we still can. Thank you again, everybody who's sticking around. And if you're still watching, you're still listening, God bless. We appreciate it. Yes, it is something that I was thinking about. I like to look at the last 21 days when updating my rankings. And lo and behold, Bobby Witt Jr. has been better than Nolan Arenado over that stretch. I didn't actually make the move, but it was something that I considered. And I put out a poll on Twitter. Who would you rather have rest of season? 54% say Bobby Witt Jr. over Nolan Arenado.
I can't necessarily make a strong case against it, except that I just think Arenado's a safer bet. But
yeah, I think it could be a safety versus upside type thing. What have you gotten to while I was gone, Chris? Was it risers?
Almost through my rankings risers, yes.
Okay. So you mentioned Cronenworth, I assume, Mountcastle.
Got all the way through to Witt. John Birdie, I mentioned I've moved him. I've very aggressively moved him up, more so than you or Scott in roto leagues. You know, that could blow up in my face, but the pace that at which he's running, the fact that he's always actually been a better hitter than he gets credit for, I do think there might be some staying power there.
All right, and you also have Max Scherzer, who is hoping to return from the IL this weekend. Some risers for me, Travis d'Arnaud, I moved him up to my seventh catcher. He's just been rock solid. He's been a little bit inconsistent, but he's just been better than other catchers in that range, like MJ Melendez and Adley Rutschman. So I just went ahead and moved Travis d'Arnaud there. Jake Cronenworth, I'm sure you touched on him. He's having a massive June, and he's getting back on track, doing the things that we like to see him doing, making contact, hitting for a little bit of power. So that is Jake Cronenworth. These next two, Chris, I mean, I'm kind of just waiting for them to fall off. But Luis Arraez, he's hitting 360, and he ranks very highly in both points and roto. I don't think he has much pop, but he's giving you runs scored. He's giving you batting average. And the other one is Jurickson Profar, who, you know, Scott talked about recently. He went 4-for-4 on Wednesday, 2 runs scored, 2 RBI. He's been leading off for the Padres, making a ton of contact. He's walking a lot, and he ranks highly in both roto and head-to-head points this year. So it's kind of just these guys are performing, and you know, other players at their position are not as well. So
yeah, Profar, I've struggled with Profar all season because there was that stretch where he was hitting for power early on, but it was like the most wall scraper-y power of all time. He was hitting like, it was very like DJ LeMahieu-esque. He was going the opposite way and hitting these like two rows up type of home runs. Ironically, if you look at his expected home runs by park, he would have 10 at Yankee Stadium. So there's that. And Cincinnati would have 13. So it's not just Yankee Stadium. I don't know, like he makes contact, he walks a little bit. I just don't know if he hits the ball well enough to sustain this level of production, but you know, he is eligible at like 4 different positions. So there's value inherent in that, that, you know, I'm probably overlooking a little bit, but you know, yeah. And Luis Arraez has a similar thing going on. He's eligible in a lot of places.
Javier Baez, we've talked a lot about recently, went 2-for-3, hit his 6th home run. His last 15 games, he's batting .291, 3 homers, 3 steals. And oddly enough, his strikeout rate this season is just 24%. So as we've mentioned, I don't know that you'll still be able to buy Javier Baez. I mean, you could buy him, but I don't know if it's going to be as low as it was a couple weeks ago. But he kind of looks like he's coming around and he's back. Charlie Blackmon, another one. I mean, his power is just bounced back this year. He's been very solid. He still makes a lot of contact, taking advantage of Coors Field. And, you know, he plays at a position that hasn't been great in the outfield. Some fallers, I just want to quickly run through these. Whit Merrifield, Jack Flaherty, and Lucas Giolito for Chris. I guess the one we haven't talked much about recently is Whit Merrifield. It kind of just might be the start of the end for Whit Merrifield because he's getting older and, you know, he just relies a lot on volume.
Yeah, that was like I was pretty high on him coming into the season just because I thought at the very least the batting average and the steals would be pretty safe. And the batting average has been bad, but the expected stats suggest he's been better than that. He still doesn't strike out at all. He's actually, you know, his quality of contact is arguably even a little better than it was last season. But it's just the lack of steals. You know, he's got 9 on the season, which is fine. You know, that puts him on a decent pace, you know, low 20s, but he hasn't run more lately. You know, it's not like he's starting to run like 2 steals in his last 6 games. That's great. He hadn't had a steal in over a month before that. So it's really the stolen bases that are causing me to downgrade Whit Merrifield. And look, speed tends to be streaky. You know, guys can go for, you know, these 4 steal weeks and all of a sudden the pace looks a lot different. So it's possible that, you know, I finally moved Whit Merrifield down and it turns out that was premature. I hope so.
All right. Followers for me, Rowdy Tellez hit his 11th home run of the season on Wednesday. That was his first homer since May 29th. He almost went a full month without a home run. Remember that awesome he had earlier in the season. He has fallen back quite a bit. That is Rowdy Tellez. Chris Taylor, I don't really know why I moved him down. I think I just saw that he did not rank very highly at any of the positions that he plays.
He's someone every time I do the trade values chart, it's kind of like John Birdie or Jerickson Profar, Luis Arias, these guys who are eligible at so many positions that it's just like it's hard to find the right spots for them, because anyone who's eligible, you know, he's what, second, third, and short and outfield.
I think he's just second in outfield. He might have shortstop,
though. I think he's shortstop. I could be wrong. But, you know, that has value in a way that's hard to put into, I don't know what the concrete terms, I guess. And so they're really hard to rank just because you kind of bump them up a little bit just based on that.
All right, am I back? Because I saw you. I saw a spinning wheel on my computer once again, so I want to make sure that I'm actually here. Yeah, Chris Taylor is solid. In deeper leagues, he's someone I actually think I would look to be buying right now. Cody Bellinger, look, man, this is going on, 3 years in a row now where he just is not performing, and at some point, I think we just got to start to move him down the rankings. Max Kepler, the expected numbers are awesome. The Statcast numbers are great, but he hasn't actually been performing. So I have dropped him down a little bit as well. It's very late in the podcast. It's been a real screwy one here.
Christian Yelich, kind of like with Cody Bellinger, I've started to move him down Bellinger a little more aggressively, but at least Yelich has the really good, or at least good, quality of contact metrics and expected stats. Like, he has a 429 expected WOBA on contact, 350 expected WOBA. Those are good. Bellinger doesn't even have that. So I do at least still have, you know, Bellinger versus Yelich was a big point of contention in the preseason. I mean, Yelich has been better, so I guess I'll take the win there, but neither's been particularly good.
All right, let's go rapid fire, Chris, see how much of this we can get to over the next 5 minutes or so. We had a pitcher's duel out in Atlanta. Carlos Rodon was awesome. 7 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts. And on the other side, Charlie Morton, 7 innings, 2 runs, 11 strikeouts. No, I did not watch a single pitch. And over his last 9 starts, he's got a 3.94 ERA. That's not great. The peripheral numbers look much better. 68 strikeouts over 50 2/3 innings, a 13.5% swinging strike rate. Charlie Morton kind of just looks like he's back. What do you think?
Yeah, you're bearing the lead. The actual reason that Charlie Morton's been good, and this is a scientific fact, the causation is clear, is I tweeted on June 8th that I finally dropped Charlie Morton outside of my top 40 starting pitcher rankings. Quote, in case you're wondering why he's about to have an awesome stretch in his next few starts. In those last 3 starts, he's got, 28 strikeouts in 21 innings, something like that. Yeah, he's been incredible. 32 strikeouts in 20 innings for Charlie Morton since I moved him outside of my top 40 starting pitchers. You're welcome. For those of you not watching, that was an exaggerated bow that I just made. That's why you heard some squeaking.
All right,
my chair is very loud.
Let's keep it moving here. You keep spinning on me, so I think it's just my connection, but whatever. Let's see how much more we can get to. Pitching leftovers from Wednesday. Pablo Lopez posted his first quality start since May 30th. 7 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. George Kirby at the Oakland A's, 6 shutout innings with 6 strikeouts. And I know I waited so long to mention Ohtani, but I was waiting for that game to go live. I actually wrote in the notes he went 7 innings. No, he didn't. He went 1 more after that. So 8 shutout, 2 hits, 1 walk, 13 strikeouts one night after posting a career high 8 RBI and hitting 2 home runs. I don't know. Like, you run out of things to say about Shohei Ohtani. He's amazing.
Yeah, I wonder, that's what, 21 combined runs and strikeouts in a 2-game span. I wonder if that's a major league record. And there's probably a way to check that. All right, I'll take over for the last couple of minutes. We'll go through the rest of these pitching leftovers. Pablo Lopez posted his first quality start since May 30th. That was also against the Colorado Rockies, so that's, you know, Colorado Rockies, pretty good matchup. 7 innings, 1 unearned run, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts, only 10 swinging strikes. Fastball velocity has been down of late, 92.8 miles per hour on the fastball. That's down from 94. And remember, Pablo Lopez was someone we talked about before the season and early on in the season, has had a string of shoulder issues in, I think, 2 of the last 3 seasons that have effectively ended his 2 of his last 3 seasons. So that's something to be concerned about. His ERA is down to 2.64. Peripherals mostly match it. Strikeout per inning, career high swinging strike rate. Frank Scott, what do you do with Pablo in Dynasty? Try and cash out now, knowing his history with shoulder problems? Yeah, I think anytime you have a situation, unless you're competing right now, where you have a player like Pablo Lopez with injury concerns, it's not so much that he can't stay healthy moving forward, but when you're talking about the long term, you should bet against most pitchers staying healthy, and especially ones with injury histories like Pablo. Had a couple of double home run guys, Yordan Alvarez, double dong. He's put that injury scare behind him, now up to 21 home runs, tied for 2nd in the majors with a .315 batting average. Yordan Alvarez is just an absolute stud. Frank moved him ahead of Juan Soto. I'm not willing to do that yet. I still believe Juan Soto is, you know, the 2nd best hitter in baseball, probably behind Mike Trout. So I'm going to give him a little more leash, but Yordan Alvarez, I think, clearly a top 20 player right now. And it's, you know, we'll see if he's going to be a first round player by next season. Aaron Judge also hit 2 home runs, increased his lead to 27. Carlos Correa, double dong, now up to 7 home runs. Some other hitting leftovers, Bo Bichette, 2-for-5 with a grand slam. Alejandro Kirk, 2-for-5 with his 8th home run. Teoscar Hernandez, 2-for-4 with his 7th home run. You missed your Teoscar Hernandez buy low opportunity. He's been great lately. Kyle Schwarber, he upped his OPS in the month of June to 1074 with his 8th home run of the month. He's up to 19 overall. Christian Walker, hit his 19th home run. He went 2-for-4 today. 187 BABIP, lowest among qualified hitters. Freddie Freeman, again, you might have a small buy low window here. He hit his 7th home run. Jazz Chisholm, 2-for-3 with his 14th home run. And this one was off of a lefty, his first of the season. He's really struggled against them. Has sat occasionally, but it hasn't really been often enough to affect his value. Paul Goldschmidt, back from that minor back scare, hit his 17th home run. Nolan Arenado, 2-for-4 with his 14th home run. Let's go to the call to the bullpen to finish off the show. Joe Barlow pitched a clean 9th, picked up his 13th save for Texas. Jake McGee came in for the save with a two-run lead, proceeded to give up three earned runs, take the bone save and the loss. Camilo Duvall had pitched on back-to-back days, so potentially wasn't available. In Minneapolis, Emilio Pagan struck out the side in the 8th with a 3-run lead, started the 9th, gave up 3 consecutive hits. Griffin Jacks came in to relieve him. He gave up a hit, and Cleveland took the lead. So, blown save for both of those guys. Emmanuel Clase, clean 9th for his 17th save. He's throwing, I think, a 96-mile-per-hour slider, I think is what I saw. He got a couple swings and misses on today. He's just ridiculous. In St. Louis, Genesis Cabrera pitched the final 2 innings for his first save. Giovanni Gallegos and Ryan Helsley each pitched 2 innings the night before, so they probably weren't available in this one. To stream or not to stream, Kyle Freeland at Miami, Braxton Garrett versus Colorado, Justin Steele at Pittsburgh, Jose Quintana versus the Cubs, so we're just going against all those matchups. Dakota Hudson at Milwaukee, Johnny Cueto versus Baltimore. I don't love any of these. I could see Freeland having a decent start, but not someone I'm excited about. I think Dakota Hudson at Milwaukee is probably the best option, but I don't love the matchup or the pitcher, so would probably try to avoid. Friday, Taijuan Walker at Miami, Mitch Keller at Tampa Bay, Dane Dunning versus Washington, Dylan Bundy versus Colorado versus Colorado at home. So he's got Colorado, that bad Colorado matchup, is only at Coors, so he's in Minnesota for that one. Cole Irvin at Kansas City, Brad Keller versus Oakland, Michael Lorenzen versus Seattle. And I kind of like a bunch of these guys. I could see Taijuan Walker continuing to roll against Miami. I could see Mitch Keller having a decent start. I'm not buying Mitch Keller, not necessarily this new synchronized version of him, but he could be fine. Brad Keller versus Oakland, I could see that one being very good. So yeah, I think there are some options for Friday's matchups for streamers. And that's going to do it for Fantasy Baseball Today. We apologize for the technical difficulties. Hopefully Frank's internet will be working better on Thursday, and I won't have to talk so much. So for Frank, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening to Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll see you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.